Handout. If you can find that handout in your package, we're going to be looking briefly at understanding effective leadership. I'm really going to be focusing on the principles of effective leadership and how those principles affect our development as leaders. I would have to go very quickly, much faster than I intended to because of our restricted time, and I don't want to violate protocol with your government. So I will try to communicate as quickly as possible and get in as much material as we can. Is that okay? Is that all right? Good. What I'd like, first of all, so we can connect here, is I can have just a quick, and this should take about 3 minutes, a quick introduction of everybody. I'd like for you to just stand quickly, tell me your name, and the organization that you represent, or where you are from. Is that right? Can we stand over here, please? Just your name and where you are working.
Good morning. Kingsley Okumbo, Hades, Dubai.
Pleasure.
Peter Adebuago, FedJobs Limited.
Thank you.
Vincent, we're CGM and Faith Mediflex.
Vincent, thank you.
James Ozoma, with Green Campus.
James, pleasure to have you.
Peter Oriya.
Full gospel businessman. Great. Peter, thanks for being here.
Chris, how are you? It's my name. Qualified Business Services.
Thank you, Chris. Pleasure to have you.
Professor Boyer is my name. Vice President of BIU.
Vice President of the university. You must be very smart. Sir.
Alex Amidia. I'm a pharmacist. Where are
you? A pharmacist. Thank you, Alex. Good to have you. Yes?
Mike Albert, Registrar of the State outside
of the... Oh, hard-working guy, huh? Thank you, Mike.
Christopher, I'm a professor, librarian, and best of the
university. Christopher, thank you very much.
Are you Dean of Faculty of Social Science and Social and Analytics Science?
Ayo. Ayo.
Yes.
Pleasure to have you.
Anthony Waifo, Dean of...
Anthony, it's a pleasure to have you, Anthony. Who else do we have here? Yes, sir. Pleasure to have you too. And the madam back there, please. Or she just signing up people. I think you all know the wife of our president. Please give her a hand for being with us this morning. Pleasure, yes. Vincent.
Benson.
It's a good name. Great. Thank you, Benson. Good to have you this morning. Yes, sir.
Lions Corey, President of Guardians of the Nation International.
Pleasure to have you. Oh, we know you guys. And I think all of you know Dr. Margaret Idahosa, the first lady of this institution. Pleasure. And sitting back there is my lovely wife, Ruth. Please give her a big hand. That's my wife right there. And over there is my daughter. She's from the Bahamas. It's her first trip to Nigeria. Y'all better give her a big hand. She is so excited to be here, so y'all got to make sure she eats some fufu. All right? Got to give her a baptism into Nigerian culture. Thank you very much. I think the rest of us are working with the school. I want to really deal very quickly with what I call the essence of servant leadership and some of the things that we need to learn about leadership. I want to talk about understanding effective leadership. I guess I need to focus on what is leadership and how leadership is born. Most of the people that we call leaders are not really leaders. Most of them are professional manipulators. And our goal as a training institution is to help people understand what makes a true leader. So I will use in this lecture the term true leadership rather than just leadership, because true leadership is my goal. I want to focus on what creates or produces a true leader. And We're going to first talk a little bit about the global context and the need for leaders in our present world. I don't think anyone can question that leadership is our number one need. In the year 1999, the University of Southern California did a study, and the study brought together some of the top minds and thinkers from around the world, and their goal was to spend 3 days to study what would be the greatest needs of the 21st century. They spent 3 days of isolation at the university. Some of the brightest brains in America, in Canada, in Great Britain, in Europe, they came together and they identified all the major needs and concerns that men would face in the 21st century. They discussed things like AIDS epidemics for the 21st century. They discussed things like natural disasters and how that would impact what's going on. They talked about the ozone layer being depleted and the impact on environmental conditions. They talked about economic problems and how that would impact on the development of mankind in the 21st century. And they discussed all of these unique problems. They talked about the social strife. They talked about crime. They talked about different aspects that have to do with economics, how it impacts on sociology. And they discussed all these issues. At the end of 3 days, they rated the top three problems that men would face in the 21st century. This was just before they turned over to, of course, the 21st century. On the top of their list in their report was leadership. They said the number one challenge of the 21st century will be leadership. Well, if they had invited me to the meeting, I could have saved them 3 days. Because I would have told them the first day, the number one challenge of the 21st century will be quality leadership. Why? It doesn't matter what problems you face, the leader determines how you handle the problem. Am I right? Think about it. September 9, we talk about 9/11. Everyone talks about that as a defining moment of the 21st century. It was the first major event in the 21st century that totally changed our entire scenario for a world. When that occurred, everybody in the world looked at one man. Who was that man? George Bush. Everybody waited on tiptoe to find out what would be his first response. I remember the day I was sitting there in my house, and I mean, no one went to work for a few hours. Everybody wanted to know, what is he going to say? What is he going to do? What's going to be his response? But as you can see, a couple of years later, we're still trying to figure out what he's doing. Because leadership determines what happens to the world, not just what happens to your country. What we are suffering today, what's going on in our very chaotic world, is the fact of what leadership decides. So I am convinced that leadership is the key to our problems and our solutions. And that's why it's important for you to take time out this morning to invest some of your time and your resources to come and talk about this issue. Leadership is very difficult to define. It's like beauty. You know when something is beautiful, but you can't tell why. It's like looking at a flower, a beautiful flower, and you say, now that's beautiful, but you can't really tell why it's beautiful. That's the way leadership is. When you see true leadership, you know it. Man, that person is a leader. But you can't really define what makes them a leader, because leadership is kind of complicated. But I'm going to talk a little bit about what makes the creation of a good leader, an effective leader, a true leader. Now, we confuse leadership sometimes with management. We confuse leadership sometimes with supervisory function. And we confuse leadership sometimes with controlling people. But there is a completely different distinction between leadership and management. And most of the people we call leaders are basically managers. For example, President Clinton was not really an effective leader, but he was a tremendous manager. And that is why under his leadership or his presidency, the deficit was completely wiped out and the economy grew so well, because managers do that. Managers manage resources properly. He was a great manager, but he didn't provide a vision for America. And of course, that's why he became sidetracked and distracted, because once his job is finished, he has no vision. So he begins to make mistakes. So even though we may have people who are great managers, it doesn't mean that they are great leaders. It's important, therefore, for you and I to understand the difference between leadership and management. Now, I have a book. I hope it's available to you today sometime. The book is called Becoming a Leader. The book has sold very well throughout the world. And I wrote that book about 9 years ago. And the book has been in over 80 countries. And in that book, I talk in two chapters about the difference between a manager and a leader. Maybe someday I will have another seminar with you to give you the distinctions of those two functions. Because if you don't know the difference, then you're still going to end up confusing managers with leaders. Now, let me just say this. Every leader must be a manager. But not every manager is a leader. And all leaders must understand some aspects of management. But not all leaders have to be managers. But a manager is not necessarily a leader, because you don't need leadership ability to manage. Management deals with systems. Leadership deals with people. Management deals with control. Leadership deals with innovation. Management deals with doing things right. Leadership deals with doing the right thing. So there's different thoughts in the two different functions. And if you want to become an effective leader before you die, it's important for you to understand what makes a person leave the realm of management and enter this beautiful, fantastic world of leadership. And you are able to do that. I'm going to prove that leadership is in this room. Leadership defines what future should look like. Very important point. Leaders determine how the future will look. Every decision President Bush makes is defining the world right now. Am I right? What's going on in Iraq and Iran is affecting your pocketbook. It's affecting what happens in the economy in Nigeria. As a matter of fact, I assume that in the next 10 years, Nigeria will become a very important player in the world. Amen. Because the oil question in the Middle East is going to become more important because of the instability that I see on the horizon. Because the decisions that are being made by President Bush, who is the most powerful leader in the world, and his influence on the United Nations and the conflict in the UN will create some scenarios that will cause the United Nations to make some decisions to destabilize the entire Middle East. And what that's going to do is turn the need for oil, which is the number one commodity in the United States, toward other sources. I hope that your government are wise enough to see 20 years down the street right now, to be able to position yourselves to become one of the wealthiest countries in the world. You could, if your leaders can see the future properly. Because oil will become really the number one passion of the industrialized nations. And the United Nations knows that. And so Nigeria is one of the leading sources of oil in Africa. And if you are wise, you will raise up leaders who can see 20, 30 years down the road and begin to plan now. The problem is, most of our leaders don't have that kind of vision. And therefore, we end up leading by crisis rather than by planning. Now, leadership aligns people with vision, very important point, and inspires them to take the responsibility and the privilege to move themselves toward that vision. Leadership, therefore, has to do with vision and people. Very important. Now, we're going to talk about the fact that true leaders are not gifts, but they are really results of a lot of changes, development, process, hard work. Leadership, even though you are born perhaps with the capacity to lead, becoming one takes a little bit of time and a little bit of effort and some formal training. Now, let me move quickly here to what I call the great misconceptions of leadership. This is not in your notes, so you want to write this somewhere. Very important. I call these the three or the four misconceptions of leadership because much of our leadership is based on a philosophy that was developed by the Greeks. The Greeks are still ruling the world today. Most people don't understand that. Three of the most powerful thinkers in Greece were three names that you may have encountered somewhere. Those names are Plato, Aristotle, and Socrates. We heard about these men, but these men were very powerful, they were dangerous, and they still are dangerous. Matter of fact, they are ruling the world from their grave. Why? Because of their ability to capture and communicate their thoughts. Thoughts are the foundations of philosophy. And philosophy is defined as your way of thinking. It has to do with your mindset, the way you've been conditioned to think about life, about people, about the world, about situations. Now, everyone in this room has a philosophy. We all do. Your philosophy is a product, your culture, your socializing within your family, your educational training, your background as a people, as a history. Philosophy is very, very subtle. It builds very slowly until it becomes a way of life. Now notice I have here that philosophy also has to do with attitude and belief systems. Your belief systems manifest your philosophy. Everyone who leads out of their philosophy. In other words, philosophy determines how leaders behave. Do not ignore this area first, because you will treat people the way your belief system dictates. You as a leader in your department, in your organization, in your company, or even in your class, you will treat people out of your philosophy. And that is why philosophy is the number one component for leadership development. How do you think? The great king and wise man from the Old Testament scriptures, Solomon, he summarized it wonderful. He said, as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. And by the way, have you noticed where I pointed when I said heart? Your heart is not in your chest. The word he used there means subconscious mind. As a man thinketh in his subconscious mind, where he's being conditioned to think, that is where the man lives out of. So philosophy determines leadership. Now, if that is true, then let's talk about the four conclusions of the Greek philosophy of leadership that are still affecting our institutions today. The first one that the Greeks believed is that leadership is a product of natural endowment. Secondly, they believed that leadership is a product of birth trait. You heard about the birth trait theory. That is a Greek philosophical position. That's what Plato and Socrates believed. Thirdly, they believed that leadership is a product of providence. In other words, the gods choose certain people to lead, and then it chooses other people to follow. In other words, leadership is a matter of destiny. You were destined to be slaves. Others were destined to be the masters. Now, that was a Greek philosophy. That's a very serious philosophy. But it is real still today. There are some people who believe that today about you, that you were destined to always be second class, and they were destined to always be the superiors. That is a Greek philosophical thought. It's very powerful, and it controls leadership attitudes today. And the fourth philosophy of leadership was that leadership is a product of charismatic personality. They believed that certain people were born with certain charisma that made them better than others. And if you were not born with those, then you were destined to be followers for the rest of your life. Now, if you look at these four very seemingly simple philosophical statements, you will see that they really are the source of most of the problems in the world today. Matter of fact, Hitler believed this philosophy very strongly. If you look at the philosophy, you see where he got his ideas from. Keep in mind that the Roman Empire was the empire that overran the Greeks, remember? The Greeks ruled the world for a while, and then the Romans came along and overcame the Greeks, and they adopted the Greek philosophy. So the Romans were different from the Greeks. The Greeks were thinkers. The Romans were doers. The Greeks were very theoretical. The Romans were practical. So the Romans took the Greeks' books and made them real and applied it to their empire. Matter of fact, it was the Greeks that invented the concept called demokrata. It's a Greek word. Demokrata means leadership by the elite. Do you see it in there? It's there. The Greeks invented that concept. We call it democracy today. Democracy is choosing the elite to lead those who are not elite. We call it majority rule. The process still means the same. The minute someone becomes a politician, they think they're better than you. Have you noticed? Have you noticed?
Yes.
They treat you a certain way. Matter of fact, you were brought up with them in school. You just play in the village together. All of a sudden, they are now in Abuja. And they treat you a little differently. Why? That philosophy is in their minds. Now, that philosophy also exists in religion. The minute somebody becomes appointed in a position in religion, they treat everybody as if they are less. Because that spirit of that philosophy is so strong. Most of our universities today are built on Greek philosophy. When you go to London, study at Oxford, that's the first thing they teach you is Greek philosophy. You go to America and study in any university, they teach you that philosophy first. In other words, the Greeks are still ruling the world. And it still exists today in your department, in your company. This philosophy is very dangerous because it demeans people. It actually creates a spirit of superior versus inferior. It produces an attitude that leadership is only reserved for the unique elite group. In other words, only certain people can be leaders. The rest of us in the masses are destined to be followers. This is the very thing that we need to discuss. Because if your philosophy is wrong, your leadership will be wrong. Now, this leadership concept is what caused colonialism, which is the history of our countries. And when you study colonialism, remember now, colonialism was really an extension of the Roman Empire. Rome ruled all of Europe, remember? The Caesars. And when the empire fell apart, the product was these little feudal states that we call Rome, we call Europe today. But the philosophy is all through there. And that philosophy was ingrained in the spirit of these nations, including Great Britain and France and Spain and different nations that began to enforce their will on territory. And so we have what we call colonization. Colonization was driven by this philosophy that these people are less than we are. We are the Aryan race. We are the superior race. And so we overcome these countries. We subdue them. And then we are treated based on that philosophy a certain way. Anybody still with me?
Yes.
Is this making sense to you?
Yes.
So therefore, we were literally, for the last 200 years or so, we were under that philosophy. We just gained independence. It's a few years ago, right? We're not old countries. In my country, we only were 30 years old. Yeah, in the Bahamas, under the British Empire. We're still trying to deal with our brain damage. You are no different. I come to Nigeria and I see the same spirit. See, independence should never be confused with freedom. Independence is something you can get with a piece of paper. But freedom is something you get between your ears. You're not free until your mind is free. I wrote a book. The book is called The Burden of Freedom. It's one of my best-selling books. Matter of fact, your president read the book. I went to visit him a few times, and on his table was my book. And he said to me, he says, Dr. Monroe, that book must be read by every Nigerian. So you better buy one. Okay. The book is about the fact that people who are coming out of oppression find oppression more attractive than freedom. because it costs too much to be free. Freedom is a heavier burden than slavery. Because in freedom, you got to think, and we don't like to think. In freedom, you got to determine your own destiny, and we don't want to take that responsibility. In freedom, you got to design your own future. It's easy to let somebody else do that for you. And so, freedom means you are free from this kind of oppression in your mind. And that's why it takes leaders who are free to set people free. By the way, the statement made by Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes, one of the most exciting books I think I read in that text. And the book in chapter 10, verse 10, it says, woe to the land when a slave becomes king. That's verse 18 of chapter 10. In other words, woe to a country when the ruler is still thinking like a slave. Sounds like a third world country, eh? In other words, when the person in charge is still thinking like oppression, the people will moan. And that's why most of our developing countries are still suffering. We've been free for 30, 40, 50, 60 years, and still there's poverty, there's sadness, there's frustration, there's economic collapse, there's all kind of corruption. Why? Because the leadership has still not delivered themselves from the oppression. Because when you are oppressed, you oppress. It's that simple. So only a free man can set people free. Is this making sense?
Yes.
Very important. Now, here's a picture of a man who you guys know, the former president of the United States, Bill Clinton. I call this the secular philosophy of leadership. I thought his picture would be working pretty good there, okay? Here's what I call the traditional philosophy of leadership, and it comes from the Greek philosophy. Write them real quick. Number one, leadership is controlling and imposing your will on people. That's a very true philosophy today. In other words, a leader is somebody who imposes his will on people. That's what the Greeks believed. Once you have been called by the gods, then you impose yourself on people. Number two, leadership is management of people. Now that may sound good to you, but that's dangerous. Because you were not designed to be managed. No human can be really managed. You were supposed to manage equipment and systems, not people. But we keep trying to manage people. And that's because we believe that management of people is what leadership is. Thirdly, they believe that leadership is superior to following. In other words, everyone strives to be the leader. Because if you're not a leader, then you must be inferior. And that's why there's so much competition. And that's why you see there's so much killing in the world. Fighting. Infighting. This spirit that if I'm not in charge, I am inferior. So I better kill the guy who's in charge so I can be in charge, so I can be superior. That very concept is what's causing so much stress in all organizations. People undermine each other because of that philosophy. Then the fourth philosophy is leaders are served by followers. In other words, the concept is you are a great leader depending on how many people are following you. Now that's a very subtle concept, but it's very dangerous. A Chinese proverb goes like this. He who thinketh he leadeth and hath no one following is simply taking a walk. The concept there is you are not a leader unless you got a lot of people following you. That may be a questionable concept, because sometimes to be a true leader you got to go by yourself first. True leadership is born when you discover something that you were born to do, not what people like. But you see, the concept is if you can get people to follow you, then you must be a leader. Not necessarily true, but that's what they believe. And then number five, they believe leadership is measured by how many serve you. This is why we get that idea about people condescending to you makes you a leader. When you have people at your beck and call, then you think you are great. When people serve you, then you are great. That's a real concept. And people work with that. They believe that. And that's why they enjoy having themselves pampered by people and having people bow to them and do their bidding, and they think that's greatness. Well, there's a concept that was indicated by the greatest leader that I know, Jesus Christ, where he refuted that concept, didn't he? he said, the greatest among you is the one who serves everybody. But that concept is reversed. It says, no, greatness is when everyone serves you. So we got two concepts of leadership there. Very different. And then this concept also purports that leadership is cultivating and manipulating the affairs of others. In other words, you use methods and you use whatever you can to manipulate the emotions and the fear of people. Leadership philosophy. Now these are the ones that are basically ruling in the world today. You'll find them in your business houses, in your governments. You'll find these in your civic groups. And then also you'll find this in your churches and in your mosque. These concepts are everywhere, because they are still Greek philosophy being manifested in a very subtle way. Let's talk about what I call the foundations of leadership philosophy. And how does it work? The foundation of philosophy is a thought or an idea or a concept. In other words, philosophy is a result of an idea that you believe. Your philosophy comes from your ideas. So what I want to present to you is some ideas that may be a little different from the Greek philosophy. Because if we don't challenge the philosophies, then we continue to repeat them and perpetuate them. Yeah? Here is a concept that I found in the book of Moses. Moses introduces a concept of leadership that's disturbing to some people. And it's found in the first book of Moses, chapter 1, and in verse 26. Here's what he says about man and about God's concept of man, the idea. Let's read it. It says, "Then God said, let us make this creature called man in our own image and in our likeness." And then he says, "Let them have dominion." Now that's a weird concept. He didn't say let some of them have dominion. He said let all of them have dominion over, look at the list, fish of the sea, birds of the air, cattle of the field, and over all the earth and everything that creeps upon the ground. Now notice, the concept that's presented here is that this species called man are all made in the same image, in the same likeness, and they're all given the same mandate. What is the mandate? Dominion. Very important concept. Now, just in case you think that that man is referring only to males, the next verse says, "So God created this creature called man in his own image. Created he this creature called man." And then he made him in two models, eh? What does it say? Male and female. So, both male and female to the Creator are equal, but different. And they're both given the same mandate. What's the mandate? To have dominion. So therefore, we know why we're created, right? Based on this theory. Why was mankind created? Can you tell me? Yeah, that's wonderful. You figured that out all by yourself. Well, I'm being facetious, but I'm not. Because if you know that everybody, 6.7 billion people on earth today, were created by the Creator to have dominion, then you must study what dominion means. So I did that. For the past 30 years, I've been working on this particular project. And here's what I discovered from studying what dominion means. The dominion mandate is a very serious mandate. The word dominion has to do with rulership, kingdoms. And here's what it means in the Hebrew language from which it was written. It means to govern. It means to rule. It means to control. It means to master or to manage. It also means to cultivate, to develop, or to have authority over. It also means to lead. Now that's incredible. That's the literal word God used when God talked about man. He says all mankind was created to have leadership, mastery, control, rulership, authority, and dominion. But what's so amazing is he didn't say to have it over other people. That's the problem. He said to have it over the environment, fish, birds, trees, land, earth, and things that creep on all fours. If you check around you in this room, your neighbor, study them very carefully and see if they get feathers. Anyone got feathers and wings? No? Okay, so you're not included in the list. How about fins and scales? Can you check? Anyone got fins? No? Okay, so we're not fish, right? So we're not on the list. How about roots growing out of your shoes? Are you a plant? Good, so you are not on the list. Do you walk on all fours?
No.
Creep along the ground? No? Okay, so obviously, according to the Creator, you are not included in the list that's supposed to be controlled, governed, mastered, cultivated, or for you to be managed. In other words, no one in this room was created by the Creator to be dominated. That is why it's important to understand this principle. I call it the potential principle. Ability equals responsibility. Whatever you are created to be and to do, you possess the capacity to do. In other words, to dominate exists. Let me give you an example, because this is very important for leadership. Give an example. The Creator created birds to do what? Fly. Is that right? Now, this is what changed my life as a young teenager, when I figured this out. He designed birds to fly. Do birds attend flight school?
No.
No, they don't. Isn't that amazing? Whatever he designed the bird to do, he put within the bird. What did he create fish to do?
Swim.
Do fish attend swimming lessons? No. Isn't that interesting? Why? Because swimming is built into the fish. He created seeds to do what? Seeds to produce what? Trees. So, have you ever seen trees have seeds have a tree convention? No. It's built in. Now, if you follow the principle, it makes sense in everything. Everything in creation, whatever it was designed to do, it is built with. So if you were designed to dominate, that is to lead, to manage, to control, to rule, then that means naturally built into you and in everybody else in your company is an inherent ability to lead. But notice, not to lead people. So the question is, what did the Creator intend for you to lead and to dominate? The answer is not difficult. Write this down. We were designed to lead in an area of gifting. An area of gifting. That is where leadership is born. If you want to be a great leader, don't strive to rule people. Strive to discover your gifting and dominate your gifting. And in the area of your gifting that you dominate, you will influence other people with that gift. That is what makes you a genuine true leader. In essence, true leaders do not seek followers. True leaders attract followers. What attracts followers to true leaders is the fact that that leader has discovered something that is worth dying for or pursuing with all their heart. That is what produces what we call passion. Passion. You cannot manufacture passion. Passion is not a product of getting excited about people. Passion is discovering something that you are convinced that you were born to achieve. And your passion for that thing is what impacts people. And that is why they want to submit and be influenced by you. This university that I'm standing in today, the man who began this work, you know him better than I do. You knew his beginnings as a little boy, his situation which he was born under, if you study his history. He was the most unlikely person based on the Greek list to be a leader. But he discovered something that was so important to him that he decided to pursue it. That pursuit created a passion. in his life. And that passion produced an attitude which says, even if no one comes with me, I'm going by myself. It is that commitment that makes people follow you. In other words, leadership is not going to get people to follow you. Leadership is you pursuing something, and your pursuit generates the passion that causes other people to follow you. Am I making sense?
Yes.
See, I'm talking about true leadership. There's manipulation and then there's leadership. That passion creates what we call inspiration. And that's the soul of leadership. The heart of leadership is what? Inspiration. Write that down. If you don't learn anything in this session, at least learn that one thing. True leadership is a product of inspiration. If you can inspire someone, you can influence them. If you can inspire a person, you can influence them. And the only way you can have genuine followers is through influence by inspiration. Let me give you a definition before we have to close. I know it's just getting good. I got a lot more to share with you. I haven't even gotten to my notes yet. But I don't want to be too late for the government. But let me just say this. Here's my definition of leadership. Write this down. Leadership is the capacity to influence others through inspiration generated by a passion, motivated by a purpose. Again, leadership is the capacity to influence others through inspiration generated by a passion, motivated by a purpose. Very important definition. This definition is very profound. It looks simple, but it really isn't. This list of philosophical statements are very important. I hope you can write them down. This philosophy listed here comes from the verse we read. That's why it's important to write it down. It is really a different paradigm of leadership that you've been taught. You've been taught by Greek philosophy. I am presenting to you a counter philosophy, and it's built on the writings of Moses, the great thinker. That leadership potential resides in everyone. His philosophy believes that true leadership is therefore self-manifestation. This philosophy also teaches that all humans possess the capacity to lead in an area of gifting. It's a wonderful philosophy. It makes you respect everybody. This philosophy also believes that leadership is the discovery and the deployment of your dominant area of gifting. This philosophy also believes that leadership is the discovery and the fulfillment of your purpose for existence. It's a beautiful philosophy. I love it. It makes me have confidence in everyone in this room. It makes me make room for you to be yourself. It makes me provide an environment for you to use your talents and your gifts. It's a leadership philosophy that allows everyone to find a place in the pattern of creation. I was thinking about birds one day, and I discovered that birds are leaders. But they are leaders in the arena of flight. Am I right?
Yes.
They can fly better than you, can't they?
Yes.
And you're jealous of them, aren't you? I sure am. Every time I see them just take off, I go, I wish I could do that. When I was a kid, I tried it. I almost died. But you see, they are leaders in their area of gifting. How about a fish? You ever been swimming in the ocean? In the Bahamas, you get beautiful ocean. And you can see the fish when you're in the water. Open your eyes, you can see them everywhere. And I get angry at them sometimes. They just swim so easily. They stay under the water forever. And I become jealous of them. They are a leader in the area of fishing, of swimming. You see, their gift makes them a leader. Say it with me. Their gift makes them a leader. See, you think that titles make you a leader. It's completely different. Your gift makes you a leader. What makes me a leader in this room today is the gift that I have developed. I was born with it, but I refined it through many years of training. You know, I got 3 bachelor's degrees, a master's degree, a couple of doctorate degrees. I refined it. But my education didn't give me my gift. It simply refined it. Your leadership is in you. The problem is most of us are in areas in our life where the leadership gift is not being used. And that's why we get paid far less than we're worth. I like what the great Solomon says. Solomon says, a man's gift will make room for him in the world. And it will bring him before great kings. I was invited by your president last year, and also in April when I was here, to come and speak with him. Why did he invite me? Because of my gift. And he wanted me to give him some advice. And I spent, my wife and I spent 2 days in his house and spent time with him. And he wanted just to talk about some of the things that he was thinking about doing, and he wanted my input. And here I was sitting with your president, giving him advice. Why? Not because I'm better than you, but because of my gift. He wasn't interested in me. He was after my gift. Your gift makes room for you in the world. I get paid $5,000 every day for my gift. When I walk into a conference like this and I teach corporate companies, they pay me $5,000 for 1 hour. Why? They pay me for my gift. They don't care about me. They don't know me. It's the gift they go after. In other words, your future is in your gift. Your leadership is in your gift. It's not in your title. See, some folks got titled, but they're broke. Am I right?
Yes.
They're supervisors, but can't pay their own mortgage. Managers of banks, but they can't buy food for their kids. Put them in college. Why? Because they confuse title with gift. And by the way, gift will always overpower economies. When everybody is poor, the gifted man will always be rich. Look at your medical doctors in this country. They spend 8 years refining a gift. When you get sick, no matter how poor you are, you're going to find some money to give these guys. On September 11th, when that event took place, it was very interesting. Do you know what happened? My business went up the next day. Why? They needed someone to come and talk to all the companies quickly. So when everybody was having problems economically, I was increased in business. September 11 added to my economic power. They needed my gift. So they flew me all over the United States. When I was, you know, on September 13th, 2 days afterwards, I was on a jet plane going to Texas to speak. And only me and the pilot was there. No one was flying. Why? I was going to work. The planes were empty. They still wanted my what? Gift. If you learn anything from me today, remember, find your gift, because that is your leadership. Find out what God put in you that is natural, that you love to do, your desire. Find it, because that is the secret to your leadership. Is this helpful? There is no substitution for your gift. Now, the definition that I gave you, let me close the definition because our time is gone. The definition that I gave you is, leadership is what? the capacity. Come on, say it with me. Leadership is what? To influence others through inspiration generated by a passion. Okay, so here's the question. Where does... Is this telling me that my time is gone? 15 more minutes. Oh, good. Okay. Is that right? 15 minutes. Can I give you 15 more minutes?
Yes.
Afternoon. Oh, that's right. I think you just tell me that by the lights right now, too. All right, let me just close with this then. If you look at that definition, you will find that leadership begins at the bottom. It begins at the bottom of the definition. It says, purpose produces passion. And passion produces inspiration. And inspiration produces influence. And influence creates leadership. So in order for you to become a true leader, not one with a title now, but a true leader, you must first discover your purpose in life. Discover what you were born to do, what gift you have, what you're supposed to contribute to the humanity. Because in that is where you get your passion. Right? No one knows the purpose for a product better than a manufacturer. And that's why we need God. Not to be religious. We need God so that we can find out our purpose in life. And then we can discover what we were born to do. And then we can discover what our leadership area is. That's what I did. I discovered mine when I was just a teenager. I wanted to find it. I discovered it. And it worked. And so I trust that this brief time we had together would have inspired you to go and do some things today. Spend some quiet time. And by the way, go out in the forest somewhere and go think a little bit. You'll be amazed what you discover. Get to know God for a different reason than just religion. Let Him introduce you to yourself. Because once you find out who you are, your leadership begins. And you won't have to worry about trying to compete with anybody. Because there's no competition with an original person. Is that great?
Yes.
Leaders never compete. And they are never jealous because you can never be me. And I can never be you. And that's why I can make room for you and enjoy your gift too. And you can feed on mine, I can feed on yours. This is true leadership. Thank you very much. It's been great talking to you for these few minutes. And I trust that you will have a great day. Thank you very much. Any questions before we, as we take down here? Any questions? Any comments? A true leader always has questions.
Okay. I guess that will be more after tomorrow.
Huh?
I guess there will be questions and comments after tomorrow.
After tomorrow? Are you going to think about it, huh? Yes. Any comments? Anyone learned anything that was important today for them?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Okay, what did you learn that was important to you? Give me one of them.
That I must find my purpose in life.
Excellent. Absolutely. Yes, sir.
That all of us are leaders.
Yes. Excellent. I'm glad you learned that one. So when you go back to your workplace, you must see that in everybody. And then you won't get rid of people too quickly. A true leader creates an environment for leaders to manifest themselves. So a true leader produces leaders, not followers. So you measure your leadership not by how many followers you have, but by how many leaders you produce. If I was to measure the leadership of Nigeria, of its government, my measure would be how many future leaders have they created before they left their positions of power. That is true leadership. Well, it's been good being with you. Thank you very much. I love you. God bless you. I respect you. And thanks for coming today. Thank you. Are we going to have any closing comments, Mr. Zita Hosa? To these wonderful leaders.
And to say that we are very privileged to have Omar and Pete to come and expatiate on what we are doing and doing. inspire us into the future of God.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you. Have a good day. I must leave. I'll see you again soon.
Tomorrow.
Where am I going to be tomorrow? Oh, you invited to the Science Center.
Let me.